Madeline and I are like figures of fine glass. The slightest touch and we may shatter. Both of us suffer from a morbid acuteness of the senses. Mine is the worse for having existed the longer, but both of us are afflicted with it. Any sort of food, more exotic than the most pallid mash, is unendurable to my taste buds. Any sort of garment other than the softest is agony to my flesh. My eyes are tormented by all but the faintest illumination. Odors assail me constantly. And as I've said, sounds of any degree whatsoever inspire me with terror.
That's why your servant asked me to remove my boots.
Yes. And even so, I could hear you coming. Every footstep, every rustle of your clothes. I could hear your horse approaching. Hear the clatter of its hooves across the courtyard, your knock. The grating of the door bolt was like a sword stroke to my ears. I can hear the scratch of rat claws within the stone wall. Mr. Winthrop, 3/4 of my family have fallen into madness, and in their madness have acquired a superhuman strength, so that it took the power of many to subdue them.
In Roger Corman's adaptation of Edgar Allan Poe's story, The Fall of the House of Usher, Vincent Price voices this explanation of his condition, known today as hyperacusis, where he can hear every sound from the ailing house. Often in Poe's tales, the basis for the story is first discovered through noises and sounds, as though hearing itself were a medium for mystery. In late 19th century English literature, it was common for characters in stories to hear things they thought were supernatural. And even Thomas Edison, inventor of the phonograph, tried to build a device to communicate with the dead. Memoirs of My Nervous Illness, published in 1903, is based on the diaries of Daniel Paul Schreiber and is analysed by Shelley Trower in her book, Sense of Vibrations. In the book, she talks about how nerves were often compared to telegraph wires. At a time in which vibrational energy was not fully understood, everything was electricity. Everything was vibration, and electricity could even be a way of communicating with other spheres of reality. The famous physiologist and father of modern otology, Hermann von Helmholtz, said that the principles of telegraphy reveal the way in which the body processes information. In both systems, indistinguishable impulses created for different reasons take on meaning only when they are received or well interpreted. Shelley Trower reminds us that, for hundreds of years, it was assumed that nerves were hollow tubes that animal spirits flowed through to deliver sensations to the brain. This idea of tubes endured and was adapted to the technology of the time. We can assume that these physiological metaphors were fairly obvious in the literature and culture of the turn of the 20th century. In a documentary on the reproduction of Marcel Duchamp's The Large Glass, undertaken by Richard Hamilton, there is a telling detail in this regard. Hamilton explains how difficult he found it to find cylindrical wires to replicate the tubes connecting the chocolate grinder to the malic moulds. In the piece, the wires transmit masturbatory or erotic energy between the bachelors and the naked bride, who is both machine and insect. The reason, we venture to assert, is that the wires are actually supposed to be filaments, that is, small cylindrical tubes which, at the time, were thought to make up the nervous system and have their parallel in the telegraph. This parallel of the body as a motorized organism activated by tubes and controlled by an electrical system was retrieved by linguist and listening scholar Stephen Connor in his book Paraphernalia. Wires, like serpents and dragons, belong to unseen, inhospitable, inhuman places. They make our words and impulses and feelings pass through invisibility and uninhabitability. A wired world is the promise of a world recomposed as a vast telephone exchange, in which everything can make contact with everything else. All calls will be returned, and everything will loop magically back on itself. But there was, and is, a vileness that breeds within wires, with their whispers of dropped stitches and disconnections, crossed wires, mazes, and black magic. This series of metaphors of body as machine, the machine as world, and the world again as body, take on a rather monstrous tone in Connor's quote. And speaking of wires, he makes it seem as though the telegraph was built in the image and likeness of the nervous system. In other words, what we now know as cybernetic metaphors were once radioelectric metaphors. And going back further to metaphors of 17th century clockwork, it becomes clear that they were also once mechanical. In fact, mechanism was at the heart of dystopian imagination at the turn of the 20th century. However, as this podcast series attests, the imagined worlds inspired by these radioelectric metaphors weren't always so hideous. Stephen Connor once again reminds us that nowadays, getting a connection tends to mean hooking up to a network, rather than necessarily establishing any physical link. Ours is a world increasingly of wireless rather than wired connections. In fact, the dream of dispensing with wires is an old and recurrent one. The wireless world that opened up at the beginning of the 20th century was going to be a world of communications affected by waves, radiation, vibration, emanation. Wires and waves are very different things. Waves belong to the magic or angelic otherworld. Wires knit us tightly into this one.